Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace. With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
That was actually a yawn, not a sigh, for those of you who have.
It's totally different.
These days are long.
Hello, everyone. I am Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, our new daily podcast where Kai and I try to make today make sense.
I'm right, though, right? That the days feel longer when you're working from home. It's just weird. It's stuff takes
well,
longer.
Well, you're
and
the one that
longer.
Added a show at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, yeah.
And at the time, I thought it was a good idea. Anyway,
yeah.
So this is us.
It is, though.
Daily.
It is.
It's us and you, your thoughts, your questions. So keep them coming. And we will, do a little news fixy thing here and we'll all sort of figure out what happened today. Cause it's just a very interesting time. It's a very interesting
to say
time.
The least, to say
but
the
I,
least.
I have a good make me smile that I'm kind of proud of today.
Oh, I can't wait.
But
I just kind of want to skip ahead.
No, you may not. Okay, don't scroll down.
All I'm right, in a dark
who's
place
going first
today.
On items of the day? You are? Oh, that's
a little bit. I would like to know. Well, I have a question for you. Can I like just break protocol? Because I think it's somewhat related.
It's our show, yo. We can do whatever.
Oh, right. There is no protocol. Ba-ba! No rules. This is somewhat related to a user question, a listener question that we got, but also related to your interview with the NASDAQ CEO the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And another piece that I heard today about basically like the question you asked, which is, why are markets open? Should markets be open? And I am wondering about, I'm wondering why markets are open. How big a deal is it if businesses don't have access to capital?
So look, well, you hit on the nail on the head right there, right? The answer they will give you, they will give you two answers. One, they, by which I mean the market cognoscenti, as it were, they will say two things. Number one is it's critical that businesses have access to capital. And Adina Friedman, the president and CEO of NASDAQ, when she was on Marketplace last week, pointed out a biotech company that had gone public about 2 days prior to our interview, which parenthetically is a gutsy move going public into this market. Holy cow, right? Mm-hmm. But this biotech firm was working on, probably something coronavirus related, or they thought so, and they wanted that capital so that they could work on their research, which makes total sense. The other thing they will tell you, and this is the one that I'm more inclined to buy into, is that closing the market for 2 days, 3 days, even a week, will not resolve the underlying uncertainty. And so the pent up panic only continues, right? And certainly the underlying problem in this economy, which is a health policy problem, has not been solved. And the example, of course, is September 11th, right? September 11th, not only did the markets not trade that day, they didn't even open. They didn't open again until the 17th of September of 2001. And the Dow fell 7% the day it opened because people were still freaked out. So the underlying freak out remains. And the theory is, let's just purge all this stuff right now. Let's just get all this blah out. We can find a bottom and then keep going. The catch, of course, is that the bottom takes a while to come. Lehman Brothers goes under in September of 2008. The market bottom comes on March the 9th-ish, 2009. So it's, you know, the bottom takes a while to show up, but that's right. Why.
Okay. Thank you. I buy that.
Anytime. Happy to do it.
Good answer. Your turn.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, I would just like to point out, so we talk a lot about uncertainty in marketplace and how we don't really know what's going to happen. Not only do we not know what's going to happen right now, big companies don't know what's going to happen. And as a result, they are doing something called pulling their guidance, which is to say, every quarter, Wall Street comes out and says to the analysts, companies come out and say to the analysts on Wall Street, look, we think we're going to make $87 gazillion this quarter when the books are in. And so the analysts go and they crunch their numbers and they figure out how right or wrong the company is going to be. That guidance is a really key metric for where stock prices are going to go. And what you're seeing in droves now is companies. Twitter was the latest this afternoon. Airbus did it this morning. They are pulling their guidance for the second quarter, which is to say the second quarter is so foobarred, we don't know what's going to happen and we cannot guess what our revenue numbers are going to be. And that's that's distressing as a marker of severity of this crisis, right? And it's, you know, it's not just Twitter and Airbus. There's a whole bunch of companies that have done it, right? United, Hyatt, JetBlue, Dick's Sporting Goods. I mean, Boeing, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what's going on. That's my thought for the day. The marker of we're in serious doo-doo is that companies are like, no, we're not going to tell you because we don't know.
I wonder if Goldman Sachs, was it Goldman Sachs that we talked about on Friday, was sticking to it sort of like we see a rebound in Q2 and Q3. And then I was like,
Q3, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Or sorry, Q3 and Q4. Yeah.
It's the whole shape of the recovery thing. You know, so we had Ben Bernanke on Marketplace today, and he said, I think the strength of the economy going into this is going to help us on the way out. So I will offer that as a note of hope.
Yeah. Yeah. For a while, I have been saying that I think testing is the only story in America. Like, I believe me, all due respect to where I work, I know that the economy is a huge part of this story, right? But I am a big believer, as I've said several times on the other show, that you cannot manage what you do not measure. And that places that have been successful at dealing with the coronavirus are the places who have done really aggressive testing, contact tracing, and then, yes, intense suppression efforts, and we don't have the test. I have since been convinced that the other biggest story is healthcare workers and that the masks and the ventilators and the respirators, that when we get to the point where healthcare systems are overwhelmed with patients, the reason things get terrible is because there's not enough gear to treat people, and there's also no protection for healthcare workers, which is just terrifying. Like, my entire next door all weekend long was people begging, like healthcare workers begging for donated masks because so many people bought N95 masks during the fires. And they were saying, if you have them in your basement.
In Northern California, yeah, for sure.
Yep. And so, you know, literally doctors were on next door saying, if you have them in your basement, please bring them over. Because we're being already asked to reuse masks. So the tech industry has in some cases sort of come to the fore and said, like, we will, because we are still in this state where business help is being requested rather than demanded with respect to supply chains and creating.
And the Defense Production Act and its utilization.
And the Defense Production Act and all of that, yep. So Silicon Valley has come and said, like, oh, we've got millions of masks and we're going to help you out. And they've gotten some good headlines on that. But Vox had a pretty good piece about how even though these tech giants have committed to providing 9 million masks through sort of supply chains that we don't know about and we don't know when they're going to come, it's also not even close to enough. Like, this is sort of a drop in the bucket based on corporate philanthropy that should in no way make Americans think that this problem is even close to solved, and let alone that we don't even know when they're going to show up.
No, totally, totally, totally. And it's also, and we're going to do this on Marketplace tomorrow, if Marielle's computer, all of our reporters are working from home, obviously. Marielle Segarra was supposed to have a spot on today's broadcast, but her computer died and will not restart. So it may or may not show up. But yeah, But she's going to do a story for us on the manufacturing turn that this implies, right? Because it's fundamentally, this is a manufacturing story. It's, can you take a General Motors air filter manufacturing supplier and turn that company into making masks? And I don't know the answer to that. And if Mariel's computer starts, we will know the answer tomorrow.
I do. I think the mask. I think the mask story is a fascinating one. On a lot. I mean, it is a human story, right? We are sending people into war with no like armor and weapons. And when it comes to our healthcare workers, but it also is it's a very sort of deep and dark globalization story, in that we apparently were sourcing materials, raw material for the masks. The actual fabric is apparently what a lot of companies can't get their hands on. They're like, yeah, we've got machines to make masks. We can't get the fabric. We interviewed a futurist who you're going to hear later on Marketplace Tech this week, who talked about how she's like, honestly, if we are going to, as, and we're seeing the drumbeat of this rise, right? Like that America needs to get back to business and the economic trade-off is too great, which is what has me in a really dark place today.
Well, let's tell people what that is, right? Because not everybody's glued to Twitter every day like I am.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit last week, I think. I talked about, you know, the fact that the businessmans are basically saying this is too great a cost, that the economic disruption is so great that we have to essentially end the suppression measures, frankly, before they have even begun. And that America, I believe President Trump said in the press conference today, America will be open for business again soon.
Which is...
that I linked to a great Twitter thread that said... a huge health crisis, which is what that will lead to, is also a massive economic problem. Like, even if you think the costs, and this is, I'm reading from these tweets, even if you think the cost outweighs the benefits and are not morally persuaded by the idea that we shouldn't let hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of disproportionately the oldest and sickest among us be left to die, the economics of that are still not good, because a lot of people will get really sick. I don't even remember where I was going with that, except that I'm so upset by it.
Yes, and it got us dark, and I am gonna bring us to the light. Are you ready?
Thanks. I need help.
I am. It's time for a little Make Me Smile here on the end of that one. And remember, Make Me Smile is that thing we're each gonna bring to this to maybe end what tends to be a melancholy discussion of the news in an upbeat way. So mine is this. Bill Plaschke, who's a sports writer for the Los Angeles Times, needed a little lift, and so he did what a sports writer does in Los Angeles, and he called Vin Scully, who was for 60 years the play-by-play man for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Scully is now 93, so he is one of those who is the most vulnerable among us, and he talks in this article that Plaschke wrote about Scully's grandchildren coming over and staying, you know, 10 feet away, and it's, you know, a little nice to see it, but it's sad, and Scully says, and this is a quote, "It's just a very difficult time to go without hugs, you know?" And then Plaschke goes on and he says this. "Scully does not remain melancholy for long. He is, remember, a believer in improbable years and impossible home runs. He reminds us that this country has endured and triumphed over great troubles. He knows from personal experience, born in 27, grew up in during the Depression, blah, blah, blah." But I thought that was just a nice little thing about Vin Scully. And if you've ever listened to Dodger baseball, whether you're a Dodger fan or not, you know Vin Scully. And that's my thing today.
That's real good. I just want to end on your thing.
Okay.
Because that's nice. I do think it is probably not too soon to look ahead and remember that there will be a future.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting through this. It's just a question of when and what shape we're going to be in. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Yeah. And hey, we will be here for you every day.
Every day.
Good place or bad place. On the plus side, I made brownies in between the work, in between the one show and the next show. I made brownies.
I haven't figured out the whole homework thing. Anyway, so that's The Daily Show. Not The Daily Show. It's Marketplace Make Me Smart Daily, or whatever we're going to call it. Anyway, we're back tomorrow with the regular spiel, full-length episode.
We'll tomorrow, actually, we are going to be talking about healthcare with Sarah Cliff, who is
with
just
the amazing
like,
Sarah Cliff, yeah.
The amazing Sarah Cliff, great, great, great healthcare reporter. And so we will have a deeper and longer discussion of all of this then. In the meantime, please keep the questions coming. We want to know what's happening with you. Just tell us also what's happening in your life. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Subject line, questions. And we'll keep our eyes up.
So, all right, we're going to riff on this for a second, go into the music. Here's what I think we ought to do. This is Kai brainstorming out loud. I think we ought to take one day a week of this daily thing and make it straight up questions. Bang,
like
bang, bang. Five or six listener questions. Yep. Yeah, like explainathon, except fast. Number two, I think we ought to take a day, and if we get them, play listener voicemails about what they're experiencing in this economy right now. And that's it. Those are my two ideas.
I love it. Did you hear that, everybody? Okay. Send them in. Yeah. All right. Okay. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson, who just went, okay. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner, and our senior producer is Jody Becker.
Oh, man. Drew Jostad engineered the pod today. Our theme music was composed by Ben Toliday, and Daniel Ramirez, the executive director of On Demand, is Star Nieves, who is also listening right now and probably going, shut up, you idiot. The senior vice president and general manager.
Okay.
And she actually does listen to this, is Deborah Clark, as opposed to the other thing, which we know
she's super
she
duper listening.
That's right.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.